You were called to make the world brighter, to run on the front lines, to cast vision where it had not yet landed. You are not gifted to be a random burst of energy, but a consistent force that enables the world to hear beauty, see potential, and write stories in a way that points the world to Jesus. Provoke and inspire. Welcome to the Provoke and Inspire podcast. My name is Ben Pierce. I have with me Chad Johnson in Nashville, as usual, and David Pierce in Germany. So it's, again, we're missing
as
Luke.
As usual.
Yeah, I know. That sounds as so usual, disappointing, yeah. Right? Yeah. Well, you know, you're predictable, and that's good. You know, it's right. Nor the highs nor the lows, just the steady middle ground. So it's good to have Chad. we're missing Luke, the British voice of reason, but he's on tour right now, and so we're going to cut him a little bit of slack. But we have someone that will more than make up for Luke and his pleasantries. But before we get to our guest, I do want to mention a few things. The Provoke and Inspire podcast is part of Come and Live, which is a ministry of Steiger International. So it's many layers. Steiger International is a rapidly growing worldwide mission organization that is called to reach and disciple the global youth culture for Jesus. We raise up missionaries, we equip the local church to proclaim the message of Jesus in a language that young people outside of the church can understand. We have a lot of ways for you to be involved, a lot of ways that you can join with us to like I said, reach and disciple the global youth culture. But the first place you start is by attending the Steiger Mission School in Germany. This is a dynamic school drawing students from all over the world to learn Steiger's values, principles, and models for relevantly sharing Jesus and making disciples among young people who would not usually walk into a church. So for more information on that, you can go to steiger.org/SMS to learn more. If you're listening to this, and you're not necessarily a front lines kind of person, but you're more into mobilizing support, equipping missionaries, then you can check out some of our organizational support roles by going to steiger.org/opportunities.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we have a great guest on the podcast today. His name is Derek Webb. If you're not familiar with the name, I'm sure you'll be familiar with the work. He's a 20-plus year veteran of the music industry, has sold millions of albums as a founding member of Texas-based folk rock band Cadman's Call. He's also a solo artist, and from what the bio suggests, he's been known to ruffle a feather or two politically and spiritually. We'll see if he agrees with that. He's also the co-founder and president of the revolutionary tribe-building platform Noise Trade, and founder of Middle Class Musician, teaching musicians to make a living, which that is a real mystery. You'll have to explain that to us how that works. The real question I have is, do you ever sleep?
Wait a minute. I was clapping. I thought I should clap. Is that a
cool? Yeah. You were right to clap.
How about you let Derek answer my non-rhetorical question?
Yeah, that's funny. I love rhetorical questions. They're my very favorite question.
Yeah, they're the good type. But anyway, thank you so much for coming on, and we really, really appreciate it. So how about I just start with this? Your latest record is Fingers Crossed, which was about a little under a year ago, almost a year ago, you released that. And as the aforementioned introduction alluded to, it ruffled some feathers. It was definitely it was deep and honest and dealt with some painful stuff. But rather than me sort of try to explain it, if you can maybe just give our listening audience
before Derek answers the question, why do you talk to us like our audience is birds? I mean, what is the whole ruffling feathers illustration?
yeah, that's right.
What's up with that?
I don't know. I don't know.
It's a tribute to the blue macaws having gone extinct. That's what it is. Or something.
We will educate in the ways of metaphor.
Yes, yes,
exactly.
Please.
That
we're
is all
to be
part
artists
of what we're
here.
That's all part of
what
we're here.
I want no literal descriptions of anything at any point on this entire podcast.
Oh, really?
Potentially only within the animal kingdom. I think that would be
Let's at least be consistent. Really working.
So good luck with that. Do you want to explain a little bit about this? This record and
yeah.
trying to David usually is the one that derails our serious conversation, so I apologize for him in advance.
Nope. And in the you got to have the peanut gallery, man. You got to have it.
Exactly. So
that's
yeah,
right.
Anyway,
that's where. That's why they pay me all the money.
Exactly. Yeah, that's yeah. right. That's right.
All right. Floor is yours.
Yeah, man. Well, it's a pleasure, and I really appreciate getting to talk to you guys and appreciate mm-hmm. what you guys are doing. I think it's like I mean, even in the world of podcasting, where there are thousands of people talking about thousands mm-hmm. of things at length every day, I don't think there is enough nuanced discussion about spirituality, and so there are not enough safe places for people to process what they're feeling in terms of their spirituality. And so I'm very much appreciate the work you guys are doing and the podcast and being able to be on it. So thanks for that. And I've been putting records out for a long time and 13 years as a solo artist, and Fingers Crossed is the new record, and it came out about a year ago. And the simplest way for me to sum up the new record is I have called it a tale of two divorces. And which you can already imagine, it's a pretty heavy record. It's a pretty sad record. But let me say this, that, you know, the job of an artist, of any artist, any creative type, but the job of an artist is, simply put, to look at the world and describe it. Look at the world, tell us what mm-hmm. you see. That's the job. And so you can't always help what comes out depending on your source material. And you know, like over my many years, I've always been focused in that way. That's my job description. I look at the world, I describe it. And sometimes when I do that job, great, joyous, celebratory things come out. Sometimes when I do that job, you know, hard and complicated political things come out. And sometimes really heavy, sad things come out. And it's not, that's not always a thing I feel like I have any control over. And but you know, it is. It's an album kind of documenting both horizontal and vertical divorce, both of which I've gone through in the last few years. And but as an artist, I feel like, at least in my old age now, I'm in my 40s and done this job for a minute.
And welcome to the club.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, you're in good company, at least for me.
Yeah, no, that's appreciated. And to that very point, I feel like my part of my use in the world, let's say, or the use of the work that I do is for someone to express something and then someone else to hear it and hear their literal feelings expressed in a way that resonates with them and then realize, oh my gosh, someone so perfectly articulated what's inside of me that I now in this moment realize I'm not the only one. And that is such a powerful and important thing. And so for that reason, I've always tried to really to work in order to be as honest as I possibly could in the art that I'm making, in order that the folks who, rather than to paint some picture or rather than to kind of smooth off rough edges, or, you know, life is full of rough edges. Mm. And that's certainly what I've found over the last year with the new record being out is, in fact, I even accidentally started a podcast as a result of
it's a great accident.
It really was. I mean, it was the literal one thing in my whole life. Next to releasing a Christmas album, which I still swear I will never do. But next to that, it was the one thing I told myself I would never do, start a podcast. But
here we are.
But here we are. But the podcast that I started, it's called The Airing of Grief, and it started as, when I put the record out, rather than people responding to the material itself, it seemed as though most people's instinct was to respond with their own stories of hard times, spiritual deconstruction. People, like, apparently there was a bottleneck, I feel like, of a lot of folks, at least in my community, in my kind of tribe, of folks who really wanted to talk about it and had stories, and that's what it brought up for them. And they started to tell me those stories. And so the podcast wound up being me and a few friends just recording candid and unedited conversations with anyone who wanted to speak to us. We just set up a Skype line and said, call us. And as long as you're cool with us, you know, recording it, we'll bleep your name out to keep you anonymous and safe. But in case what you're sharing is really sensitive in your community or whatever. And we started recording conversations we were having. We would talk to anybody. And, you know, we've recorded hundreds and hundreds of these conversations with folks, and over a couple of seasons have curated them together by topic and have been releasing them. And we found that that has been even a further vehicle for people to hear not only me, an artist or whatever, like who maybe they feel as though they can't fully relate to, you know, but they hear everyone, anyone, all kinds of people with all kinds of stories, many more stories even, and nuances to the conversation, talking about what they've all gone through. And it's made even more people feel not alone. And that has proven to be an important thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Derek, something I really agree with is that so much of art, you know, and Christian art has become so non-confrontational and so much like wallpaper, you know what I mean? It's like, and I don't want to create wallpaper. I mean, one time they, you know, some people were really angry about our show because it's very strong and it has a lot of strong messages in it. And people were saying to us, you know, there's some people that don't like what you're saying, you know, so you shouldn't say it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, we're not here to make wallpaper. We want people to be confronted. We want people to be, you know, you want something that's going to make an impact on people, impact their emotions, their feelings and all of that. I agree with that.
Well, I appreciate it. And the ironic thing, cause you bring up, you know, the idea that you said that you feel as though a lot of Christian art or music is non-confrontational. And I think that that's not only true accidentally, but I think it appears to me to be very much intentional.
Right.
Over many years, I've thought a lot about this. And the thing is, you know, you see billboards on the highway for Christian radio stations that advertise themselves to be safe for the whole family. And yet I have never in my years of professing Christianity, never did find this to be particularly safe and definitely not for the whole family. If you really look at anything he ever did or said, he was not a safe character. You know, I just find that to be unfortunate, false, like it's misleading, it's false advertising. And a lot of, I think for that reason, a lot of what Christianity, at least in the marketplace, has communicated is the opposite of what it actually is. It's really false advertising because it's like the idea of Christian retail stores and bookstores that what seems to be sold there is safety. That seems to be, it's kind of classic consumer mentality where it's like, if you have a fear, we have a solution. We have say, and it's like, you know, are you afraid you're not going to get a date here? Well, not till you mentioned it just now, but now that you say it, yes. Oh, great. Well, because we've got this toothpaste you can use and that's going to make your breath fresh.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But it's like what the radio stations and the retail stores and just the whole industry seems to be selling. Even back when I was a kid, there were kind of I remember these posters that were kind of the, if you like Alanis Morissette, you'll love Rebecca St. James kind of thing.
Right. Oh,
so
I remember those.
So it feels as though it's less about being a good advertisement for the God of the first chapter of the Bible, who made all things out of nothing and very good and original. And it's more kind of this designer imposter. And the bummer is it's not true, because if you walk into a Christian retail store, the idea being sold is come in here and everything beyond the threshold of our doors has been pre-vetted and, for your spiritual discernment and health. So come right in and just leave your powers of discernment at the door and consume it. Will.
Right. Yeah.
I know a lot of people who make all of the stuff that's in those stores. And the truth is that we are just as likely to lie to you as anybody else. And I'm not saying it's on purpose, but I've seen a lot of Christian art that is completely misleading in terms of the character of God, in terms of the condition of people. And so it's just, it's this big marketing kind of fiction that we've created. The idea that there could even be Christian art, Christian music is it's illogical. And I'll end with this, but I've said it before, is that the word Christian, when applied to anything other than a human being, is a marketing term. And that's not a bad thing. Marketing terms are super helpful for us to find our way in culture to the things we want to consume, but it's not something you can hang your security on. It does not mean that Christian stuff is inherently right, true, good, or beautiful. It doesn't mean any of that. And in many cases, it's clearly it's not. like designer imposter. So it's just a confusing scene, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, I heard you, I listened to a lot of podcast interviews that you did recently. And one thing that you said is if you try to make art to fulfill the expectations of your audience, you will kill it. Now, of course, that's a paraphrase, but yeah. Essentially that is terrible, terrible way to approach art. And even in this context, it feels a bit chicken and egg because it's like, right. Is the industry conforming to the expectations of the Christian audience, or right. have they created the expectations of the yeah. Christian audience that they now have to fulfill? I mean, it yeah. seems like it's kind of a both end, right?
Well, I think that's right. And also it feels like the difference between what do people want and what do people need. And, yeah. and I think mm-hmm. if there's anybody in culture, and I don't really have a dog in this fight like I used to, but if there's any group in culture who it seems should be making whatever sacrifices necessary, it would be artists, you know, of some faith, of Christian faith. Like that would seem like something that would trump our consumerism and our wishes to become famous and wealthy. And it seems as though that's what would do it. But the thing is, I remember I read a book years ago by Oz Guinness, who I still think is a tremendous thinker. And he, I think it was called Prophetic Untimeliness, I think was the name of the book. But the point is, he said this great thing. He said that a lot of, and he really fleshed it out in his book really well, but he said that a lot of the problem with, I think he was probably talking about kind of Christian leaders and pastors and whatever, is a lot of where we go wrong is in confusing success for faithfulness. Those are two different mm-hmm. things. They're not mutually exclusive. You can do both, but you think about like Jeremiah went for 40 years in the wilderness with no converts.
Yeah, don't look like success.
That was happening in America in 2018. It would not take a year for Pastor Jeremiah to get a new praise band, to get more comfortable seats, to move into a modern building, to mortgage, yeah, to yeah. get another, you know, like he wouldn't stand for it because he would feel like he's failing. But the thing is, that was the point. The point was for him. The point was not for him to have converts for those 40 years. It was for him to be faithful. And it's like, I think that that is a big bit of confusion for a lot of what we call Christian artists. Yeah.
Isn't that because of everything has become commercialized? I mean, the whole idea of, I mean, it's ruined everything because everything is about money and commercialism.
Maybe so. I don't really know. I mean, it's been an industry for a long time, and it definitely institutionalized more than 40 or 50 years ago now, I guess. But I think that can be okay. I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with capitalism, but I think what it is you have to see it for what it is. It's definitely complicated when you institutionalize something like the commercial side of a faith expression. I think gets very complicated, but I think it gets even more complicated when there's cavalier messaging that the things you're consuming inside of a capitalist structure are actually saved, right, true, good, beautiful, as opposed to saying, well, these are just products that you might like if you're a Christian because they're products. It's not they're not any better or truer than any of the other messages you'll hear anywhere else. You still need to discern and vet them just like you would anything else you're consuming in that structure. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the idea that it's like lulled a lot of people, a lot of communities into believing that they are the exclusive commercial expression of God in the world. And that if you are, because I remember, you know, I did not grow up this way, but I have a lot of friends who grew up feeling as though if they were not listening to Christian radio, like they were made to feel really terrible and guilty. Like, well, you know, if there's a such thing as Christian music, why wouldn't you want to be listening to that if you're a Christian? Like,
it's opposite in my world.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, and that's great, you know, I mean, and that's why you're here trying to help everybody. But it's like that. I think that's really more, it's not so much that the institution or the structure is the problem, in my opinion, in that we are so anxious to anchor our discernment and our processing abilities to something as simple as a marketing category that we're just lazy. We don't want to do the work of actually thinking for ourselves about these things. And so we're like, oh, well, if someone else has rubber stamped that Christian, I might as well just buy that. So cool.
Right. Well, it's like I was at a Christian bookstore and they were selling Jesus mints. They
oh yeah,
like
sure.
Those are the best mints ever, dude. Come on.
Well, and so again, that's exactly why it's problematic, because the idea, when you talk about Christian people, the idea, as I understand it, is that these are the people who will be in heaven to the exclusion of all the other people. That's the saved people, the ones whose souls have been redeemed by Jesus. That is the idea. So the problem is when you start to apply that same, nothing else that you call Christian can be Christian in that same way other than people. Because you can't say, oh, well, so like you said, here's the Christian music and Christian educational institutions and Christian whatever else, you know, you want to put that adjective in front of.
Yeah.
Like that is not the only, much to the relief of a lot of people maybe listening right now to this podcast, the music you hear on your local Christian radio station will not be the only music in heaven to the exclusion of all other. because it's a thing we've made up, you know, like things cannot be saved in the same way that people can, arguably.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So that's what's problematic about calling anything but people Christian. And here, yeah. Just as my parting shot on this, what's crazy and the most ironic is that it's actually a super, super recent invention, the idea that people would even call themselves Christian. You see it as a public verdict. You see basically people come in living a certain way, behaving in a certain way, caring about people in a certain way, and you see and then you hear other people say, oh, look, those must be the Christians. But the group themselves never presumed to declare themselves so, that it was never self-prescribed ever. So it's a very recent invention that we would march in somewhere and say, we're the Christians. Like, that's a dangerous and very recent thing. So
yeah,
just as a parting shot.
Yeah, it's this whole topic is it's difficult and it's tragic at the same time, because you have a again, like you said, capitalism isn't inherently evil, but it does live by certain principles,
right.
and one of which would be that not everything is marketable, and some things are certainly more marketable than others. And so you have a faith that becomes homogenized and fits within this very, you know, tightly defined idea of what sells. And the sad part about it is again the whole chicken and egg versus, you know, do we create the expectations or is that why the industry forms the way it does? The sad part is that the implications are far more than mints. I think we have a whole subculture that people safely live within, but it also extends to, it's a very unthinking faith. It's a very unchallenged faith. It's very flimsy, and it's very it's also sort of syncretistic. It's mixed with Americanisms and partisan politics and things that God would never want to attach to Himself.
Right.
And if when it gets out into the real world, it often doesn't hold up. And so we often talk on this podcast about needing to break past a cultural understanding of God and wrestle with it to a point where you really understand who Jesus is. So it's sad because it's more than just mints. And I think that kind of breaks my heart in terms of this whole industry situation.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think that's why, because most churches and most expressions of Christian practice, like on the internet or anywhere else, don't really hold or provide the safe space to really talk about how what we're really feeling and when we go through hard things. And, you know, like I kind of see most, you know, 85.5% of what all Christians are doing for most of their lives is really the dress rehearsal for when things really get hard. Hopefully, everything we've been practicing for the last 20 years shows up and turns out to be real, because that's when you find out. And the people who at least we talk to on our podcast have discovered that it wasn't, and it didn't, and it didn't remotely comfort them or show up for them. And in fact, when they really had to lean their full weight on it, it collapsed. And I know that's not everybody's, to be fair. That's not everybody's experience. I know that it's not, because I have a lot of, we've talked to almost as many people on our podcast who do have the opposite experience, but there are a lot of people for whom Christianity or the idea or the practice of it or the community expression of it has really failed them, and they have nowhere to go and talk about that. There's no place, because most churches are not safe places to do that. And that's really problematic.
It is.
Yeah.
Derek, one of the things that I've always honored and respected about you, and as someone who also came out sort of, I don't know, maybe on an edgy, in an edgy kind of way from the music world, sort of I think I wanted to see the whole thing. Like, honestly, I hoped that I could just light a match to the whole thing and watch it burn. And then that's really hard to say now, because obviously God's done a work in softening my heart and giving me compassion and giving me love for people, even when I disagree with them. But it's kind of through all of that, that I realized, man, you've carried this really bright torch for honesty and transparency long before I remember anyone, that like before there's Brené Browns or like any, I don't know. I just didn't really think that there was a whole lot of people doing that. And so I just want to honor you with that. And then also, as we kind of like, man, as I'm looking forward at, okay, well, what does God want to do for both people who have been very hurt? Because generally, and I don't know if you would agree or not, but generally it seems like hurts come more from the institution or the mechanism or the maybe leadership of it or different aspects, more so than they come from the actual, like, man, Jesus himself, when I really got to know him, he actually just wasn't there. I don't know. So how would you maybe comment or see that?
Yeah, no, that's a great thought. And I too, like you, and I think this is why you and I have been friends and found each other probably over the years, is that I also, like, I've got an extreme personality. I definitely, my first instinct is always, well, let's scrap it, you know, and let's start again. And I think the harder work is the work that you found yourself in, which is to find ways to surgically redeem and repair and to work inside of something rather than to come on the outside and try to tear down. And that's definitely the harder work. And right on with that, I've certainly, like I said, because of the experience I've had speaking to so many people in the last 2 years on our podcast, or year, I should say, on our podcast, the thing that I found is really helpful when we're having conversations with people and they want to just tell us their stories about what they've been through, their spiritual experiences or whatever. It seems as though that is, especially when someone is in the midst of trauma and in the midst of heartbreak and in the midst of having to navigate really hard times, it seems like that's most people's instinct as well. It's my instinct all the time. That's how I'm wired. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of those folks, they find themselves just wanting to give it all up and scrap it. And what's interesting is if someone, you know, wants to say, here's what happened to me, here's where I am now, here's where I, when I look at the world, here's what genuinely, what I see and what makes sense. And here's what how I'm going to live my life. You know, you want someone to feel as though they can be precisely where they are and navigate from there. But I feel as though I have, talked as many people out of giving up, surprisingly to myself, as I have, you know, anything else, because what we figured out, what the through line on the podcast tends to be, or the thing that is proven true on a lot of calls is, okay, before we go too far airing our grief about what we've felt or experienced, let's be careful, because the stakes are very high when it comes to our spirituality, what we believe. That matters a lot. And so let's slow down and let's break it into its necessary pieces. And what we have found is there are at least three pieces of this thing that you need to kind of deal with separately, as opposed to tossing the whole baby out. And that is that there is the institution of the church, the kind of social political expression of the church, like as it's like a big institutional idea. There's that. And that's one thing to contend with. There is the congregation of the church, the group of people who are practicing Christianity in public. So that's going to be like your people in your community, local churches, whatever, but groups of people, other people. And then third, there is this idea of this other who made all things, and who, the idea of God, you know, who this person, people, being who made everything, to whom you need to be reconciled, and is alive in the world. Those are three, and there are probably many more, but those are at least the three. You can't really break it down any simpler than that. And most people, as it turns out, don't really have a lot of problem, as you just said, with the third. They mostly have a big problem either with the community of people who have mistreated them or abandoned them, or they no longer relate to or feel as though their voice is being expressed by the first, the institution, the political movement and expression of the church in the world. And I think it's really important to break those down separately and to reckon with each one. And you know what? Some people really do genuinely have a problem with all three, and that's okay. But there are a lot of people that I've talked to who are ready to give it all up. And I, ironically, because I mean, I don't identify this way anymore. And, but I ironically find myself convincing them to stick it out because I genuinely, they've been failed by people and institutions, and the stakes are too high to be cavalier about that. So I think you're right on about that.
Yeah. If I can pivot this conversation just a little bit, so as I was preparing for this and thinking through what angles we could go, without necessarily guessing where you're at or where you are spiritually, one thing that I found very kind of a consistent theme in the things I heard you talk about was sort of the reaction to the things that you were putting out there and sort of this heartfelt desire to want that to be better or maybe to be more productive. And also I felt a genuine concern that you had for people's, their own journeys as it related to the things that you were saying. And so the question I have is, as an artist, you invariably have influence. And I don't think any artist would want to not have any influence. Sure. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but that would seem very strange. And so as that, you know, how are let's say those maybe more in the quote unquote orthodox or more, you know, evangelical view of things, mm-hmm. or anyone with opposing views, how are we supposed to meaningfully productively engage with what an artist puts out? So say you release this album and it's very honest and it says a lot of things and it communicates a lot of things. There are a lot of, you know, trolls on the internet that are not productive, but, but how, cause I feel like what happens is, you know, we'll come out and, you know, of course we would love to have the conversation the way you and I are now, but it doesn't often work that way. And so that you have, you know, commentary on what's being produced.
Right.
And from a distance that can be seen as judgmental.
Right.
But I feel like to give the whole picture to someone who maybe is wrestling with what you're putting out, there needs to be some way to do that. There needs to be,
yes.
Counter voice sounds contrarian or it sounds too negative, but do you understand what I'm trying to say with that?
Yeah. And it's honestly just hard to say. Because we live in a strange time and we live in a time of kind of mass broadcast false intimacy. We live in like it's, and I think honestly, I think that in order to be an artist or not really even just an artist, I mean, surely just as much, what you guys are doing with the podcast is certainly an artistic expression. It's a creative expression, but beyond just artists, musicians, I think really anyone who is saying anything out loud, and taking any kind of position about anything, you know, opens themselves up to be, in turn publicly discussed. And I think that we just kind of have to accept in a way that artists just didn't. It was just not part of the job back then. Like it was really like managing the public's reaction to what you said or made was really no consideration and no part of the job. And, and I mean, if anything, and I don't mean to get off on a rabbit trail here, but the idea of art as a commodity even is a super recent invention I mean, the majority of the art that's been generated and made and arguably the very best of the art that's been made in civilized culture was made under the patronage system. It was made under, you know, institutions, governments, churches would commission art. Artists were blue collar workers who had very little money and they made tremendous art. It was to the benefit of all of culture. Nowadays, the expectation is that you're going to make something and everyone's going to purchase it and own it and feel this ownership over it and then feel the right as a result to comment about it and kind of give their two cents. And that's fine. It's just an evolution. It's just an adaptation. It's a shift. But I think it's important for artists to not get too personally wrapped up in criticisms and critiques and judgments, because because first of all,
sure,
it's not really you they're responding to on the surface level, but on a deeper level, what they're doing is talking about themselves. People are revealing and confessing things about themselves, and they're projecting and using you to do it. And that's okay. That's part of this. That's part of the use of art, maybe. And so I don't mind doing that. It's just sometimes weird to be on the other side of the two-way glass and to see people doing it and to not realize what they're telling me and maybe no one else. And to be sure that I keep myself detached from it in a way that keeps me healthy and sane, you know?
Yeah. And I think that my big thing is, I just think we need to, like, I want to reclaim, not maybe purposeless conversation, but just generally the art of conversation is so lost. I mean, I was able to talk with Jonathan Merritt. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but we had a great conversation. And so much of the struggle is that we live in such a, everything becomes so polarized immediately. People pick their camps. They want to know who's in, who's out. And then we don't have conversation. And again, we might need to do a part two to unpack what you were talking about related to interpretation.
Yeah.
There's some postmodern implications to that that get my head spinning.
Sure.
In terms of, but even then, like, how do we have meaningful conversations? How do we even react to what artists are doing in meaningful ways that confronts, or at least helps us to aim in the direction of what's ultimately true? I mean, yeah. I firmly believe there are objective truths. If there aren't, we're sort of floating in midair. But that mm-hmm. doesn't mean that we don't have a lot of our own biases to have to work through to get to it. And a lot of assumptions we make about the world mm-hmm. and the vantage point through which we view. And I think wrestling with art and wrestling in conversation is the way that yes. we get to the essence of what we actually believe and get yeah. past some of the baggage that we've attached.
Yeah. Well, and so I agree.
Yeah,
that's
complicated.
And I think you're right on. I think, and I'm not to be oversimplistic about it, but I think the way we do it is this. I think yeah. it's, we have to take the time. It takes intention, and it takes, you know, it's easier to give a short answer to a question for which there is no short answer, and risk being misunderstood and risk miscommunicating and saying something that's half true in preference of something that's fully true. It's easier to do that. It takes doing the harder work, the more intentional work of having long conversations. And that's what you guys do. That's why I think I honestly think that the boom of the podcast industry
right.
is in small part a reaction to exactly what you're describing. Yeah. The fact that there yeah. is nowhere to have long, drawn out, complicated yeah. and nuanced conversations about anything. And every yeah, podcast, that's what they're doing. And I feel like it's just this natural reaction.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Derek. Well, Derek.
Yes.
Do you know who Nigel is?
Yeah, he doesn't want to talk to you now.
No, I love it. Of course I do.
Yeah. So anyway, he said that... he has a question. Is it all right if I ask the question?
I'm not sure if he heard your introduction through all of the...
Yeah, I just interrupted
the,
it, sorry.
The Skype delays.
No. Oh.
Yeah, okay. I just got a text from Nigel. He said that he's your number one fan.
Oh, gosh.
And, nice. And,
I know exactly who we're talking about. Yeah, go ahead.
So he said, have you ever been abducted by aliens? Were you probed and why?
What?
Oh my goodness.
Good luck with the why.
I think that the only thing, the only response I can give you to that is that sounds like a better question for the aliens.
Yeah. Valid.
I would direct you to the aliens. That's the only thing I can really say about that.
Brilliant. Yeah, no,
that is very valid.
Nigel. Yeah.
Hey, Derek, thanks so much, man, for giving us your morning on a Monday morning. I know you have so much to do and
oh,
we're just super, super grateful to have talked with you and connected. This has been thoroughly enjoyable, and I love your perspective.
Did you just
and,
say how, thoroughly, like the mythological?
Yeah,
did you
yeah,
say
yeah.
Thoroughly?
Thor, you know. Yeah, thanks. At least somebody's got my back on this thing.
Thor-like
Derek,
qualities
on more often.
This conversation
I need more
had.
Moral support.
You need an advocate, man. No, hey, it's been a
yeah,
pleasure.
Thanks.
And I really love what you guys are doing. I appreciate getting to be with you.
Yeah, thanks, Derek.
Absolutely.
I don't want to make assumptions, but would it be all right if I said a simple prayer over you and in your life as a closing kind of remark?
That's fine. Sure.
Okay, cool. So Jesus, thank you so much for who you are, even when we're struggling to understand where you are or what exactly you desire for us or any of the big questions in life. And I just thank you for Derek and the incredible gift you've given him. I pray, God, that you would meet him by your spirit in ways that would be totally and fully surprising and beautiful and just like, huh, how did that happen? So God, do whatever you want in each of our lives. And yeah, have your way. Amen.
Amen.
Cool. Thanks you guys.
Derek. This is the Provoke and Inspire podcast. That was Derek Webb, and I thought it was a great conversation. I'm not sure. Is there anything you want to specifically promote, or was this just a conversation about life? What do you want us to end with here?
I think it could be both. If anyone's interested, since we talked about a couple of specific things, that fingers crossed, you know, we talked about the new record, and that's anywhere anywhere you go looking for music, you'll find it.
Kinko's.
I don't know that. I can't remember the last time I've gone there looking for music, but yes.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. I took that too literally.
So fingers crossed is the new record. It's available kind of wherever. And then and then anywhere you listen to podcasts, The Airing of Grief is my friends and I having conversations about spiritual D and reconstruction. So all those things are resources if you want them. Yep.
Great. Well, anyway, thank you for joining us. Thanks for those that listen to this. Do consider sharing this if it challenged you or if it made you very angry. Either way, we'd appreciate you sharing it. Let us know on all of the social media. Send a note to Chad specifically in a basket.
Yeah, yeah.
To his
Chad house. At comeandlive.com. Send all your hate mail to me.
We'll talk to you next time, and thanks for listening. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Provoke and Inspire, the official Come and Live podcast. To hear past podcasts, go to comeandlive.com. Got a question for the guys? Send it in to provokeandinspire@comeandlive.com.